Before we get to this episode, just to say thanks to everyone who's bought my new book, Champion Thinking, How to Find Success Without Losing Yourself. Published by Bloomsbury, the response has been terrific. It's an Amazon bestseller. It's been top 20 in the airport charts consistently, and the reviews have been terrific right across the board. And if you like this episode that you're about to hear on Flow, you'll be sure to enjoy Champion Thinking. Head to my website, simonmundy.com, or Amazon, Waterstone, Smith's, places like that, to get your copy.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, welcome back. Simon here. I am currently on holiday with the family, getting some much needed sun and vitamin D. So I am midway through my 3 week break, and I am therefore re-releasing an old episode with one of the nicest guys in show business, Kevin Clifton. This was recorded back when he was still on Strictly, but the lessons we discuss are as salient as ever. As I mentioned last week, I'll be back with new episodes and some exciting stuff in a couple of weeks, which I'm really looking forward to sharing with you. But first, here is the delightful Kevin Clifton. Kevin Clifton.
Hiya.
Kevin from Grimsby.
Always straight in there.
Tinkerbell as well.
Tinkerbell,
I got that from,
from my podcast, yeah. Right. Tinkerbell, because I need claps all the time to stay alive.
We'll come back to that. Anyway, listen, it's not every day, particularly on Don't Tempt School, I have a Strictly legend. So this is a real privilege.
Oh, well, thanks for having me.
No, my pleasure.
I get excited about podcasts.
I know, you love a podcast, right?
Yeah, yeah. I have loads of podcasts that I listen to. So when I was told about this, I was like, yes, definitely.
What are your favourite podcasts?
Well, I have to listen to all sport ones, so sort of football ones, like 606 football phone-ins.
Football Daily.
All of that. I love like Formula One and stuff. I'm a big wrestling fan.
Yeah, The Rock is your hero.
Yeah.
The Rock and Robbie Williams. Yeah. See, I've done my research.
Yeah, you have done your research. So I listen to a podcast called Gorilla Position, which is a wrestling one, and then just a lot of mindset and business and entrepreneur and self-development type stuff.
Man after the own art.
Yeah. Old people like Tony Robbins, Gary Vaynerchuk.
He annoys me, Gary.
Does he?
I follow Gary and then I have to stop following him.
Why does he annoy you?
It's just a bit too
a bit aggressive.
Yeah, just a little bit. Yeah. I like a little bit of softness in there, with it as well.
Yeah.
Anyway, I do like him, but I sort of dip in and out.
Yeah.
Anyway, so Gary Vee.
It's hard keeping up with him because he's so constant as well. It's like every day.
Yeah.
He's
relentless.
As a podcast, and he's got so much social media stuff.
Anyway, that's enough about Gary.
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah.
Big fan, Gary.
Come on the podcast.
So you are a big sports fan.
Yes.
Favorite sport apart from wrestling?
Yeah. Well, wrestling's not a real sport, is it?
That's another conversation altogether.
Football.
Yeah.
I'm a big Scunthorpe United fan.
Of course.
Since I was a baby. They're having a woeful season in League Two. We got relegated last year from League One. Now we're down the bottom of League Two.
Right.
I'm really struggling. But yeah, I'm a shareholder at Scunny.
Hey.
My uncle used to be a director. Around the time when I was a baby.
Right.
So I've got all these pictures of me and all the baby Scunthorpe gear and then I used to mascot the team out and stuff.
Really?
So they're very much my team.
That's proper football fandom there.
Yeah. And I love going. I love going. And don't get to go very often.
Does it bring, what side of you does it bring out? Because, like, you're a nice guy. Everyone says, you know, that you're, I'm going to nick a quote that I was going to throw at you later. With. So Susan, your old Strictly partner, yeah, who said you treat everyone so nicely.
Yeah.
More so than you treat yourself. So you've got that sort of nice, very nice persona. When you're at the football, does that get dropped to one side and the,
absolutely.
Let's have it.
Oh, yeah. I'm a monster. I'm an absolute monster. And also when I'm watching England.
Really?
Like, because of my dad. My dad's a lifelong Chelsea fan, they're my Premier League team.
So is he?
My dad's
Londoner?
A Londoner.
Is he?
Yeah, my mum's Grimsby born and bred. Right. My dad's a Londoner, and he's a lifelong Chelsea fan. Right. So because, well, I don't see Scunny being in the Premier League anytime soon, Chelsea are my Premier League team.
Right, okay.
So if I'm watching Scunny, Chelsea or England, I'm an absolute monster.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, my best mate's a Chelsea fan, and I've been going there since the Hullet days.
Yeah.
Never, haven't formed that emotional connection
right.
with them. Don't ask me why. So you're a big sport fan, right? But often you talk about how dancing, and this is fair, but this is a debate.
Yes.
The dancing is not a sport, it's an art.
So for quite a while, the sort of powers that be in the ballroom dance competition industry have been trying to get ballroom dancing into the Olympics.
Yeah.
I mean, ice skating's in the Olympics. Gymnastics yeah. is in the Olympics. So they want ballroom dancing in the Olympics. But I have a real issue with it because it's so... First of all, dancing is about expression and entertainment. You know, it's there for making us... You know, when we just go out dancing ourselves, we're just going out to feel good.
It's about the feels.
Yeah. And people watching, like even just you watch Strictly Come Dancing, everyone's got different favourites. Like, everyone votes for someone different. There's no sort of... And even the judges themselves are scoring everyone different. There's no absolute of who is the best dancer. Yeah. It's also...
Subjective.
Yeah. So my thing is, like, if you're watching Usain Bolt in the 100 metres... If he runs past the line before everyone else, he's the winner. And you can't argue about it. You can't go, well, I thought the other fella should have won. And you go, well, it doesn't matter what you think because Usain Bolt got across the line first. So there's no argument. Whereas I can say, I like that dancer better than that one. And someone else will turn around and go, well, that's madness because I like that one better than that one. And so you can't have an absolute, like, who's the best. And then if you're going to go down the road of, well, we can set out a set of rules of, like, this is what the technique is, because there's different techniques of dancing that you learn from different schools of technique. If you're going to go with, like, well, we're going to set it out so it can become a sport, these are the techniques that you have to get right, these are the boxes that you have to tick, then you're just going to end up with a load of dancers that are dancing exactly the same, and there's no room for creativity.
Mm-hmm.
So you lose the whole creativity and art of dancing, uh-huh. and I just don't see the point in
okay.
that.
Right, I'm going to throw a couple of things back
okay.
at you. Okay, first of all, so my favourite sport's tennis.
Yeah. Right?
So you've got then the big three, as they're called, Djokovic, mm-hmm. Federer, Nadal,
yeah.
and everyone sort of tends to be in one of the three camps. And I think the reason Federer is so popular is because he is an artist.
Yes.
Because he makes people feel in a way that
yeah.
very few others do.
Yeah.
So I think even though there yeah. is a clear winner because the ball's either in or out,
yeah.
I think the fact that he, you know, the argument over the greatest, his ability to make people feel and his artistry plays into that. So that's one thing.
Yeah.
Second, and that's often, it's not just him as well. You think of, like, Lionel Messi, Muhammad mm-hmm. Ali, even Michael Johnson, the runner. I think they have that compelling,
yeah.
you know, side to them.
Yeah.
Then also, I was looking up a quick definition of sport. Check this out. An activity involving physical exertion and skill in which an individual or team competes against another or others for entertainment.
Oh, really?
Yeah. That was the first thing that came up on
wow.
Google. That's in the dictionary. So, and then the fact that, you know, competitive dancing was considered for 2020 and 2024. Now, I'm not saying that it is or isn't, but I'm just justifying why I've got you on this podcast mainly.
Yeah.
And it is a conversation. Like there are crossovers.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, and you think of, like, Bolero with, you know, back in the day with yeah. Torval and Dean.
And it's athletic and it's physical.
Exactly. And you have to be in tip-top shape and you have to be supple and all that. Your body is your instrument, if you like.
Yes. But like, it only seems to be considered, as far as ballroom dancing is concerned, like, should ballet dancing be an Olympic sport?
Well, it could be, couldn't it?
I guess it could be.
I mean, you could just broaden it so far. I mean, squash is getting increasingly annoyed, the amount of things that leapfrog it, you know.
Like, yeah. Could, you know, when people go to Zumba classes, should Zumba be an Olympic sport? So, because it's physical and athletic.
Well, there we go. So I had Joe Wicks on this podcast. Now, they don't compete at all, but I was trying to sell it along the lines of now increasingly sport, because you get like park runs and all this kind of thing, where it's about being inclusive as well. So it's not just about the competitive element.
Mm. I just think, where do you draw the line?
Well, absolutely.
With dancing, I think the danger is stifling creativity.
Yeah.
And my thing is, when we're talking about people that make you feel, I'm sort of obsessed with this and the idea of you know, who you get obsessed with because they just make you feel something. And I talk about singers a lot, you know, like, it's not necessarily, like, my favourite is Robbie Williams.
Yeah.
There'd be a debate, like, is Robbie Williams the best singer in the world? Most people would probably say no, that I can probably think of someone better, as a singer. But for me, Robbie Williams is the best. And I feel like that with dancers as well, that there's, like...
charisma, and it's, like, the X factor.
Yeah, there are dancers that make you feel stuff. And have this ability to move you, you know, to move you emotionally with their expression and their performance, or to get you excited with how much they can entertain you.
Yeah.
But like, if it's going to come down to whether, you know, their technique is better than someone else, then they're probably, those ones might not get anywhere. But a really boring guy who's just done ticking all the boxes is going to be celebrated as this sort of winner, this Olympic gold medalist or whatever,
no,
and can be the most boring,
absolutely
pointless dancer on the planet. Like, what are you there for? You're not entertaining anyone. Yeah. You don't seem like you're having a good time. There's no expression involved.
Yeah.
But we'll just call it an Olympic sport and give you a gold medal. I don't know.
I understand. Right, let's get a bit into your story. So you were born in the beating heart of the dance world, Grimsby, in Lincoln.
Yeah. Yeah.
Lincolnshire. And you were born into dancing royalty. So dad, Keith, who you've already mentioned, Chelsea fan Keith,
yes,
and mum, Judy. And you started dancing at four. And there were dancing legends in their own right, world number ones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Crikey. I mean, that's... So your path was set from an early time, really.
Yeah, I don't really remember my first dance lesson, even. Like, it was just... I've just always been around it. It's always been completely normal, like routine, really. So my mum and dad told me that when I was about four... I just started joining in at the back of dance classes because they have a dance school.
Yeah. So they had the dance school even then?
Yeah.
Right, okay.
Yeah, Clifton Dance Academy. And I'd just be taken along to the dance classes, say, like, if grandma and granddad couldn't babysit or something. And I'd be at the back of the class, and then they'd have the kids' classes just doing sort of agadoo and stuff. and at one point, I've stood up and started trying to copy what was going on in front of me. And that's developed into, they've sort of brought me along to the class to take part in the class every week. And it's just been like completely normal. And it's just progressed from there. It was as normal to me as, you know, just wake up, have breakfast, go to school, come home, do homework, go to dance class.
Yeah.
It's just part of my normal daily routine.
Uh-huh.
And it's just developed and developed into... Because my sister does it as well.
Of course.
And
I found some lovely pictures of the two of you because you used to compete together.
Yeah.
Cool. What a chocolate box handsome pair you were. I've got one here. Look, where is it? I know this is a podcast. This is irrelevant. So there she is in her pink dress. Look at that. Isn't that lovely?
Oh, yeah. Look at us.
Look at you. Butter wouldn't melt.
That's just at the stage where... She's only a year younger than me, but you know how, like, when girls start to grow faster than boys? And she was starting to get a bit taller than me.
I did have to check your ages, actually, off the back of that.
And for a while, we were adamant that I was still taller than her, when clearly she was about a head taller than me. but we were dancing together.
Because I've got a sister, older sister, and I remember being competitive. Like, one of the first questions I remember asking my mum is, you know, can I grow to be older than my sister? Just because, you know, she was older and I was like her toy, essentially. So there is that competitive element, but yet you were competing together. So were you competitive with each other as well as alongside each other?
I suppose alongside each other for competitions, because we were competing together. when we were practicing, I was really quite sort of, I was always right. You know what I mean? When we were kids, I was really competitive. For me, I was always like, I suppose like even now when you say listening to people like Gary Vaynerchuk and all these sort of motivational people, I was really into that when I was a kid. And my dad was really all about all of that. So he used to say all this stuff to us. So I've grown up with this like, smash through a brick wall to achieve attitude. Right. Like, no one will ever stop me. Yeah. Like, I will make this happen. It doesn't matter how many times I get knocked back, I'll always get up again. And, you know, I've always been like that. And so even when I was that young as a kid, it was like, I'm going to win and I'm going to blah, 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 blah. My sister was really chilled. Like, really? She didn't really care whether we won the competition or not. But then, so when we were having dance lessons or doing our dance training, if something was going wrong, it was too easy for me to say to my sister, that's your fault because you're doing this wrong. And even if she said, no, I think you're doing this. No. Really? I know I'm doing it right. Like, so I was a bit like that. I feel like now that we're old, it's almost switching the other way.
Really? Interesting.
I'm still very like, if I've got my mind on something, I'll make it happen. But I'm a lot less competitive than... Really? Than I used to be, whereas my sister is fiercely competitive now.
Really?
Yeah. She's like, no one standing in Joanne's way.
Really?
If she's even just trying to get to the cupboard to get some coffee out. She's like, no one standing Joe's way.
That's really interesting.
Because she'll knock you down.
So with your parents, so they were competing when you were young. So did you see how they dealt with victory and defeat? Like, what were they like? So you said your dad was uber competitive.
Yeah.
So, okay, let's say he went to him with your mum, went to a competition and didn't win. How would they react?
If they didn't win?
Yeah. Would you sense a disappointment like in your father if he's got that kind of drive?
Yeah, well, see, I never saw them like competing like when they were in that zone. They'd retired from competition before... Well,
there we go. There
yeah,
we go.
Before I was born.
Right.
Yeah, a couple of years before I was born. But I think their sort of competitive edge definitely spilled over into me and Joe.
Really?
And so I saw them like when we were competing from very young. I remember probably like 7 years old. I remember being at a competition and at one point I'd hurt my leg or something and my dad was talking to me and I was going, oh, I can't go on. Like, I've hurt myself. I feel poorly, whatever. And my dad was going, no, you don't. I was like, no, I do. I can't walk on my right leg. Yes, you can. It's all in the mind. It's all a mindset. Pain is just a mindset. Like, if you think that you're fine, then you're fine. Like, my dad was like that. And I was like, I don't think I can do this. And my dad would go, are you a man or a mouse? That was his saying, are you a man or a mouse? And I was going, I'm 7. I have no idea what I am. I don't know.
In the middle.
Yeah. I don't know what's happening.
Yeah.
But my dad was very much like that. My dad used to give us like motivational talks and stuff, like the night before a competition. He'd talk about, you know,
knock out some nice quotes, that kind of thing. Apart from man or mouse.
Yeah.
Any other that stick in your mind?
It was very much like there's no shred of doubt in your mind. It's not even a question, will you win tomorrow? You will win, and you walk onto the floor knowing that you're going to win, that you've already won. Like, it was like that.
Okay.
from being
no
really young.
Self, like, push all the self-doubt out of your head.
Yeah.
And were you able to do that? Or did it, you know, like, so when after a talk like that, when you went into the competition then, were you completely without self-doubt, or was it a little bit like,
I think a lot of the time when I was really young, I was, because I sort of didn't know any better. I was just like, that's what my dad was saying, and everything that my dad said goes, you know.
Of course, yeah.
But then probably when the biggest sort of knockback, like early on, like that I can remember, was when we were training for the big, like the British Open.
Wimbledon of dancing.
Basically the Wimbledon. Yeah, you've probably done your research. Yeah. The Wimbledon of dancing is the British Open, and that's at Blackpool. And that's the one that you're training for all year, the big one that you want to win. And we're in the juveniles section, which is the under 12s. Mm-hmm. And everything was geared up to on my last year of doing that, me and Joe's last year of doing that, when I'm 11, we're going to win that at Blackpool. And everything was geared towards that. And then, and we got there and we would have all these motivational talks. And it was all very like, you know, like from 3 months before, I already know that I've won this, you know, that it's right, this tunnel vision. That's what my dad used to say all the time. Tunnel vision. You don't see anything else. All you see is, it's like very eyes on the prize.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I knew I was going to win that competition from 3 months before.
And did you?
Came fourth.
Oh my, stop it. Yeah. Breaking my heart. Yeah.
And so I guess that was the first time when I really felt this like, hang on, what happened? Like, so I'm not invincible? Like what?
Yeah.
Like, but I knew I was going to win. It wasn't even a question. Like, and I didn't win.
So how did you feel then when you came fourth? Can you recall them saying fourth? And fourth is, I mean, you're just out of the medals. That's, they say it's the worst spot. No offense.
Yeah, and because there was I don't know where this came from, but there was some sort of documentary happening where they were following a couple of like young people that are into, like, there was us doing dancing. There was another little girl that was into singing and acting, and someone else that was into like karate or something. These little kids that were sort of trying to achieve. And for me, it was the whole story that it was going to be recorded on. It was like a film, and the camera was on us, and they were about to film us winning.
Right.
And it was all this whole like movie in my head that was happening.
Sure,
when I was like 11 years old, it was one of them sort of underdog to wins in the end movies that was happening. And I remember the camera being on me, and I was ready to go on as they went into first place at the British Open Juvenile Latin Championships. And in my mind, I was ready to walk on the floor and go. Even in my head, I was like, I'm going to celebrate like this. Yes. This is going to be my celebrating move. And they said, from Denmark, this other couple.
From Denmark.
Yeah, what are you on about? And then second, from Slovenia. And then third was another British couple who was like the British number two behind us. And they'd beaten us. And I was devastated.
Really?
I remember coming back to the hotel and crying and just being absolutely devastated and trying to look for reasons why, because I was so full of inspirational quotes and motivational talking.
The tunnel vision.
Yeah, that in my head, I'd never even considered that I might not be the best.
So how did your dad react to that?
I think they were gutted as well. My mum and dad were gutted for me and Joe. My sister didn't even care. My sister was like, well, you know, there's like sort of seven judges that were judging us. And they were like, these judges are quite old. In a few years, they might not even be here. Like, that was my sister's attitude. Just like, we don't need to worry about that.
Yeah.
I was looking for, like, I couldn't understand why we hadn't won. And then the problem is with the ballroom dance world as well, because you're getting judged from other people and it's not an absolute, as we were talking about, there's a lot of room for political shenanigans.
Yeah.
Because there's, it's teachers that are also the judges. So some of the teachers are teaching the couples that are
actually competing.
Competing in there. Yeah.
It's no sport.
That's what I mean. It's like the manager of a football team.
Yeah.
Or it's like Federer's tennis coach and Djokovic's tennis coach being the umpire.
Yeah.
Yeah. And making decisions just about like who's getting the point. And it's like, well, clearly that was in. It wasn't even close. Nah, it was out. like there's room for that. So I think from what I remember, I think my mum and dad were going, don't worry, you know, don't be able to, you danced really well. You did really well. But, you know, sometimes the judges can be a bit like this and you know, looking for excuses, probably just because they want to soften the blow for me.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't want to talk bad about my parents. It's probably not what I needed at the time.
Right.
It's probably not what I needed.
Listen,
the lesson I probably needed to learn was you got beaten.
And that happens.
And that happens. And they were better than you.
Yeah.
The three couples ahead of you were the three couples that were better than you. But now you knuckle down, you work harder and keep going. But because there's all this room for political shenanigans in the ballroom dance world, there was always an excuse of, you could always justify in your head.
Rationalize it, yeah.
That that judge marked me sixth today, probably because my mum and dad used to beat them when they were competing against each other.
Blimey.
Or
yeah, yeah.
That judge is the teacher of the couple that came third. Uh-huh. So they wanted to make sure that they were ahead of me. So they marked them first and me sixth.
Yeah.
You know, and so you could always sort of rationalize it all course, like that yeah. if you wanted to.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and that's not good for you, I don't think.
No, I agree. Look, a couple of things. First of all, like, you know, parenting is hard.
Yeah, like, sure. I'm not a parent, but
no,
I'm sure, yeah.
Parenting is hard. Like, everyone's just making up as they go along, and like, and everyone just tries. No one nails it all the time. Like, that's just a factor, though. So, like, it's not in any way casting judgment on your parents or anyone's parents. Like, because everyone just tries their hardest, right?
Yeah.
But one thing that did stick in my mind, though, is, like, as someone... So I used to play a bit of tennis, right?
Yeah.
But unlike you, I'd never had the tunnel vision. I almost had the opposite, right? So I'd be like, I'm going to lose, you know? Like,
oh, no.
But it was, like, quite... subconscious,
yeah,
you know? Like, cause I think anyway, but then what I've noticed is that when you do get ahead of yourself and start thinking this is in the bag, like, I know that's when I'm in trouble,
yeah.
So, you know, and I think so. You were thinking ahead for all this period and thinking, okay, this is in the bag,
yeah.
Whilst that's kind of a good thing to have a goal, to think of it as a banker,
yeah.
In my experience, that's where things often go wrong, like life sort of turns around and goes, ah,
yeah,
don't jump the gun.
Yeah.
Did you learn a lesson from that then? You know, like thinking, okay, no, I can't count on the fact that just because I think I'm going to win, I definitely will.
Yeah, definitely. I think it probably made me work harder because I was like, oh, right, I'm not invincible. Exactly what you said. I'm not just it doesn't just happen just because you think it.
Yeah.
Like, you got to learn that that's a tool for, you know, inspiring you towards a goal rather than some sort of, oh, you've thought it, therefore it's going to materialise.
A magic trick of sorts.
Yeah.
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 So it was a good lesson then, that experience. It was a harsh one, like, clearly.
Yeah. Yeah. But it worked both ways with me because it meant that, yes, I'm going to work harder and harder and harder. But also, I think it broke me in a way that is still there.
Right.
Like with me.
Right.
Like, because it used to be like, I remember that feeling of just feeling invincible. And I haven't had that since.
Really? So how old were you when that happened?
11.
Yeah, I mean, crikey. Yeah, it's formative stuff. I mean, that's a hard thing to go through at a young age.
Yeah, yeah. And so it's probably gone a lot more and more and more as I've got older the other way into what you were saying of like, I'm going to lose this, or I'm not good enough, or I'm da 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 da.
So you fear that thing happening again?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So I'll almost protect myself against it by going, chances are I'm not going to win this,
yeah.
And stress myself out about it because I really want to.
Yeah, it's interesting how, you know, we do make that. So you've made that decision then, and it almost becomes unconscious. It's like the cliched person who has their heart broken at 13.
Yeah,
you know,
and then
runs away
from
relationships because they're dreading it happening ever again. And it's not like at the forefront of your mind, but it, you know, it's funny how our brain makes these decisions, and then boom, there we are. We're stuck with it as an unconscious belief for the rest of our life.
Yeah, yeah, and I've had this sort of difficult relationship with the sort of competitive thing of wanting to win ever since. And like on Strictly, one interesting thing is that before last year I'd been in the final four times and been like, my first 4 years on Strictly I was runner up.
So it's the story. I love it.
Yeah. So my first year it came down to like, as Ali Ash came on the show the same year as me, we were both in it together and we both made the final on our first year, but he won. And then the next year, I thought I had a real chance to win when I was dancing with Frankie Bridge, but didn't. We came second. The next year, I was dancing with Kelly Bright and she absolutely smashed it in the final. And I thought, wow, if ever there was a chance, she has annihilated everyone in this final.
Yeah, third time lucky.
And we didn't win. The next year I was dancing with Louise Redknapp, and that was the year that I was in with my sister in the final. And on that year, I got to a point where I was like, I feel like I have to win this now. Like, Like, I know it's an entertainment show, but I can't just keep coming second. Like, there has to be a point where I do it. And I was really going for it, and I remember really wanting to win that year, and I got almost back towards that mindset of like, this is the one, I'm going to win this year. This is it. And I remember saying, this year more than ever, I want to win, rather than thinking, oh, it's an entertainment show and it doesn't matter at the end of the day, and it's all about the fun and the expression and entertainment.
Yeah.
That year, I remember thinking, it would be amazing if we won, and came second again to my sister.
Oh, God, that is tough, isn't it?
Which was like mental. So many emotions going on.
Wow.
But then last year, there was that feeling when I was answering Stacey Dooley that, like, for most of the series, I didn't even think about winning at all. I just didn't think it would be a thing. Like, we weren't one of the favourites to win. And then it seemed to start going better and better and better. Then when we got to the final, I remember because I had a conversation with Stacey that week, and she was a bit down that week and was going, I feel weird about this final because I don't know what my place in it. I feel like I've achieved everything because I've made the final and I never thought I would. But there's the two girls, Faye and Ashley, are way better than me. I'm never going to be able to dance like them. And then probably the guy that's in the final, Joe Sugg, he's probably going to win. Everyone loves him. He's got a massive following. You know, he's brilliant. He's going to win. So I feel like I'm just a bit of a spare part in this final. And she was like, I don't want to get your hopes up because you've come second so many times.
Oh, wow.
And there was this weird thing in me that was like, I don't care if we don't win this time. I'm not obsessive about it like I was before. I actually don't care. But I think it was a perfect balance of, it doesn't matter. It's not going to break me if we don't win. But also, I think you're 99% right that probably, like, Joe Sugg's going to win. But if there's 1%, there was still that little bit left in from my dad going, if that door is open 1%, then you better do everything you can to kick open that door. So I said, we might as well just work as hard as possible to go for the win, but accept the fact that we're probably not going to, and not stress about it.
And that's the perfect combo.
I think that's the perfect combo.
Yeah.
Yeah. So rather than like, I have to win or my life's over, it's like, it'll be fine if we don't win, but I'm going to do everything I can. And we just went for it. And funnily enough, that results bit with the four of us stood there. It was the fifth time that I'd been stood there waiting to see whether I'd won Strictly or not. And it was the most calm I've ever been in that situation. The four times before, I was like, please say Kevin. And this time I was like, I don't think they're going to say Stacey and Kevin. They're going to say someone else. That's fine. And I was really relaxed, just waiting for her to say, you know, Joe Sugg and Diane Boswell or whoever. So then when they went, Stacey and Kevin.
Yeah.
But it was really weird that I was in that zone.
See, I think that's really interesting. Like, to take the bird's eye view of your story. Okay, so back what happened when you were 11, you know, and the devastation of that. And then you've gone through these four defeats where you kind of wanted it, almost needed it to some degree because you're hyperventilating and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And then the moment at which you essentially let go, you win.
Yeah.
I think like that is actually kind of a life truism to say. You know, everyone goes on about it's the person who wants it more. In sport, there's this cliche. Yeah. They want it more. And actually, I think people are slowly starting to realise, actually, in many times, it's not that. You put the work in and then you surrender and you let go, and that's when the results come.
Yeah, it's the dedication to the process, I think, is the key.
And then being, you know, and then, you know, let go of what happens.
Yeah, of course you want the result. Yeah, exactly. But if you know that you want the result, but don't focus all on that.
Yeah,
that's not the be all and end all. Just focus everything on the process, the work, the hard work that goes into it. And you've got to love the process, I think.
Yeah.
Like, you've got to be really into. You've got to really want to dance well.
Well, that's where the gold is. Like, I've spoken to Olympic, you know, medal winners, and one springs to mind in particular who was great. So Goldie Sayers on, and she was awarded a medal actually 11 years later because a doper had won a medal.
Right.
And she got the medal, and she was like, I had it at home, and I just thought, you know, like actually it's this odd little not actually gold thing. You know, doesn't actually have the value. The value came in the journey that I had along the way, not in the result and putting all the importance in actually, oh, the recognition of coming first, second, third, da 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 da.
Yeah.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
There was that moment of madness when they said our names, where I just got really emotional in that moment because I couldn't believe what had happened. And it's the end, and you're tired, and it's the end of that process, and it's all come together. So I was really emotional when it happened. Then we went to the rap party of Strictly, where everyone just wants to be together, and just everyone wanted to come over and say, "Great, oh, amazing, brilliant! Yeah. Can I have a picture with your glitter ball?" You know, like all of this stuff, and people were calling me and texting me, like my phone's going mental. It was a weird feeling. All I wanted to do at that point was just go home. I just wanted to go home and be on my own and have a cup of tea. That's what I did. I left the rap party really early. Everyone parties until 4 in the morning. And I just went home and put Match of the Day on. I did.
Well,
I went home and got in bed and made a cup of tea and just put my glitter ball on the side table and just watched Match of the Day. I didn't want to really talk to anyone. I didn't want to talk about it.
That to me strikes me as like a good thing. So you're doing what you want to do at that time, because like having listened to you chat on your podcast, you know, you've spoke about how sometimes you weren't always great at doing that. You know, like so you had the chat with Russell Brand, I know, and he sort of suggested you stop boozing, and then so that almost feeds into this. So if you did, the fact that you did go home, that's what you wanted to do, and you decided to go and do it. That actually weirdly feeds in with all this other stuff around kind of, you know, recognition and approval and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, because a lot of the time I've wasted so much energy doing it for approval, doing it for other people. Like, this is where the Tinkerbell thing comes from. It's like, they're coming to Tinkerbell because, like, from the film Hook, if they're not clapping me, then I'm gonna die. And I could have spent that moment just soaking up all the attention and approval and playing that part of being the winner, because that's what I was doing it all for. I wanted to be celebrated as this winner, and for everyone to tell me how good I am, because I feel like for so long I've needed that, and I'm still trying to let go of it. Like, I don't get it right all the time, but weirdly in what I guess I would consider my greatest sort of success, like greatest achievement, that winning Strictly, in that moment, I didn't want everyone's approval. It was like I was really happy within myself that it had happened, and the journey and the process had been amazing. We'd done some great work. We'd finally done it, and I just wanted to get out of there I just wanted to go home.
It's not, that isn't a coincidence. Like, hearing you talk, it seems to me that that is not a coincidence, you know, that you've kind of, to some degree, learned a valuable lesson,
yeah,
about letting go of approval and, like,
yeah,
and, like, okay, doing what you needed to do to make you feel good, like, genuinely,
yeah,
feel good. Because, yeah, we all like approval.
Yeah.
You know, you say, you know, your industry attracts people who like to be clapped.
So, yeah,
I'm in broadcasting. Mm. You know, my industry attracts people who like to be listened to. It's not, yeah, a huge difference.
Mm.
But to actually tune into what you needed at that moment, did you learn a lesson then, a big lesson from that Strictly experience and winning it like that?
Yeah. I mean, I've become very sort of self-aware, you know, of all that. And I can clock when I'm doing things because I want approval or I want attention or I want people to clap. And I'm much more aware now of, like, when I'm actually doing something just because I'm dedicated to the work. And I suppose that night just sort of validated all the when you hear people saying, you know, trust the process and get obsessed with the process. Mm. Gary Vaynerchuk, he talks about that, yeah, a lot. You know, like, you've got to love the work. You've got to love the process,
yeah,
more than the result itself. Yeah. Of course you want the result.
Of course.
But it's all about the work itself. Uh-huh. And I guess that just sort of validated that, because I was putting so much into it. And Stacey was putting so much into it. Like, we were doing 14 hours a day of training, which is the most I've ever trained on Strictly. But I did it kind of 99% knowing that we weren't going to win.
Yeah.
So that was really interesting.
So with those 14 hours then, you were really into it, like really in the flow of...
Mm.
Enjoying that practice. So that wasn't 14 hours of slog. I mean, I guess it was.
Mm.
But were you able to enjoy that training?
Yeah. Yeah, I loved it, actually.
Well,
and she loved it. She was really enthusiastic. So I was enthusiastic about teaching her as well. And we were working really hard. But when you love it, it doesn't feel like that it's hard work. It doesn't feel like a chore. Like, oh, God, I've got to go training.
Yeah, yeah. So looking back on that series that you won then, where does the training rank within, if you think of Strictly 2018, I guess, what are the first sort of memories that come to mind?
I suppose it's the process of, like, Monday being a nightmare, like Stacey feeling like she, oh God, I'm never going to be able to do this dance. This feels so, like, beyond me. And then just working, and getting to the point where she felt like she was doing a good job. Like, that gives you so much satisfaction. Getting to that point where she feels good about it, and she feels like she's, I can do the routine to music now. Like, I'm doing it. I get it. And where she's sort of really improving. Like, I love that bit.
So that's the standout memories for you. That kind of, so it sounds like selfless growth mindset.
Yeah.
And that's the thing you value most looking back.
Yeah, I think so.
See, that I think that speaks volumes.
Yeah. And I mean, obviously it was brilliant that we won.
Of course.
And that night was brilliant. Like, the best week was week 10. We were doing Paso Doble, and we just had a week, like, on our Blackpool one the week before. Do you know what? The Blackpool week of last year was probably the one part where I let it slip. Once you get to Blackpool on Strictly, week 9, it's sort of business end, you know, you're heading towards the end of the season sort of thing. That's when it gets a bit more competitive. And me and Stacey were doing quite well. You know, she was improving. And I think around Blackpool, I wanted to do a great number, and there would have been a bit of me thinking, can we win this? And a few people were saying, do you know what? I reckon you guys could win this. And I probably let that get into my head a little bit. And we had this salsa dance to Gina G, Ooh-ah, just a little bit.
Gene.
And she was coming down on a massive stick of rock,
yeah,
from the ceiling. And I thought, this is going to be great. We're going to blow everyone away at Blackpool. But that became the mindset a little bit. We are going to blow everyone away at Blackpool. So, like, the result, mm-hmm, of what was going to happen. Everyone's going to stand up and cheer and clap. That's going to be, you know. So I was slightly maybe less focused on the work, uh-huh, in the same way that I had been. And I thought we had a great dance. So I was like, focused on the result. This is like, this is going to go down great, maybe tens. And it went well. The dance itself did go really well, but the judges weren't as favourable to us as some of the other couples, and we sort of finished in the bottom half of the leaderboard. And I had that same feeling of when I was 11 at Blackpool, when I came fourth. I was absolutely gutted. And Stacey was very much like, why are you so emotional tonight? Like, what's wrong? Like, I thought it went really well. And I was like, it did. It went amazing. She went, so why are you annoyed? Because I thought we were going to get nines and tens and we got sevens. And that's interesting, isn't it? We were going to get nines and tens, or when I was 11, we were going to win the British Open and we came fourth. Yeah. I was really gutted.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas actually I should have been just focused on, we smashed it. We did a great dance and mm-hmm. I'm really happy with how it went. That's how Stacey was.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next week, that knocked me back and I went into more of a mindset of, well, obviously we're not going to win. So I stopped focus on winning and I just was focusing on the dance itself. Let go of the winning. Uh-huh. Let's just get back to what it's always been in this series for us. Just training, 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 enjoying it, doing the best job we can do. And we were doing a Paso Doble and she was struggling, man. Like, she was struggling all week. Like, and she even said, like, normally she'd start to get the routine on a sort of Tuesday or Wednesday. Thursday evening, she still couldn't do the routine all the way through to music until right at the end. And I was thinking, this is going to be a case of us just getting through this. But we'll keep working. And we decided to put an extra rehearsal in on early Friday morning just to do a few more hours to make sure we were solid on it. And we did those few hours and really focused on the work. And she went out on Saturday and absolutely annihilated it, like smashed it. We got three tens and I hadn't even thought about the score and we got three tens. So it's just that same thing, isn't it?
It comes back to it.
Yeah, just love the work and love the process itself.
I hear this a lot. So you've talked like a little bit about codependency, right? That essentially sort of means, isn't it, you getting your worth more or less from outside, in a nutshell.
Yeah.
And I think that's often tied up with perfectionism, you know, and I think this applies to anybody. So like, I know, for example, if I do a podcast, it's easy to focus on the feedback I get or anything like that. And that can be the same in a job interview, or anyone can sort of relate to this. But if you just come back to that being in the moment, enjoying it as it happens, that's when the good stuff happens.
Yeah.
Like, it's such a key life lesson. And yet we all seem to think to some degree that, I think you said it nicely, what is it? I'll be happy when.
Yeah. You know? I'll be happy when I achieve this. I'll be happy when I get that. And it's never enough.
No.
And I'm still bad at it. Like, I'm aware of it. So I can clock it a lot easier now when I'm doing it and try and remind myself, don't think like that. Da, 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 da. But I'm still like, I'll just be happy when this happens, when I can get that gig, when I can, you know, if I could just earn more money from that, if I can, get more listeners, get more viewers, or if
I can, for a lot of people it's money, you know.
I'll be happy when this happens. Uh-huh. I think so many people do it. Everyone does it. Yeah. And you forget to just go, just things are great right now. Like, just stop focusing on all of that. Like, stop worrying. Just be happy.
You know? God, easier said than done, right? How good are you now at then, or how much better are you, I suppose, at giving yourself the approval as opposed to seeking it externally?
I think I'm better, but like you say, it's all a journey. It's all like, it's constantly moving.
No one's ever the finished product, I don't think.
No, and I still battle with it. I'm you know, constantly on this sort of self-development thing, trying what's going to work better for me. How can I improve? How can I, you know, work things out? And I started getting into meditation.
Oh, mate, love a bit of meditation.
Yeah.
Mindfulness?
What's the app?
Headspace. I've had him on my pod.
Oh,
Andy
right.
Puddicker.
Okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Have a listen.
Oh, yeah, we'll do, yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, I love doing the Headspace. And sometimes, not very often, but sometimes I can sort of quieten my brain a little bit. And that's the problem. My brain is just always going all the time, thinking, overanalyzing, overthinking everything. sometimes I can just sort of take a step back. Most of the time when I meditate, I'm thinking I'll get to the end of my 10, 15 minutes, whatever I've done, and be annoyed at myself that I'm not Buddha yet.
So common.
Why am I not enlightened?
So common. Andy and I spoke exactly about this. And yeah. I think the whole beauty of it actually, though, is that I know I meditate for a long time.
Yeah.
My mind never, I'm like you, it's...
Yeah.
The good thing, though, I think, is observing it and being able to recognise that it just carries on and that it's kind of not you, and then being able to just not identify with the thoughts. So to me, it's not about making your mind quiet. It's more about just noticing them going and not buying into them.
Yeah. Just noticing them happening.
Yeah.
And going, oh, that's interesting that I'm having that stupid voice again. Yeah. I wonder where that's come from.
Exactly.
And sometimes I can do it and go, yeah, separate yourself from that thought and go, that's probably as a result of this, you know, this thing that happened a few years ago, or, you know, whatever. That's where that lives. But most of the time, maybe 80% of the time, that thought comes in and goes, you're not good enough.
Well, yeah.
Everyone's forgotten that you won Strictly. You're going to have to win it again. Do you know what I mean?
Of course. I fully get that. Yeah, it's never enough. Like I say, that, like, the ego, though, is, you know, it's based on more.
Yeah.
I do think, like, yeah, being able to recognise that it's not you. Now, look, we've got to wrap this up, but there's one thing that I heard as well you talk about from when you went to see Tony Robbins that I really liked, which is the idea. Okay, so part of this critical inner voice, or this one that's focused on the outcome or wants more or whatever, that everyone I'm sure listening to can identify with to some degree, though, is the message that actually understanding we're not broken.
Yeah.
Something about self-improvement and self-development can be, I need to change. But actually, it's about accepting where you are and who you are and being okay with that. That's where the gold is.
Yeah. So he sort of talks about, I did this seminar of Tony Robbins when I was really sort of in the middle of, I don't know, whether it was a breakdown or I was having a real bad time and really not feeling good about myself. And
critical voice at its height?
Yeah, at its absolute height. Just feeling completely worthless, like I hated myself, hated my life, just, you know, everything was in my head going wrong and I was no good to anyone. Like, I really went through a period of that. And, just beating myself up all the time. And he sort of talked about this thing where it's like when you're a kid, if you're, like, at a restaurant and you just got loads of energy, you're at a restaurant with your parents and you just want to run around the restaurant screaming, going, and pretend sword fighting or something. And kicking someone at the next table. Like, if that's what you want to do, you just do it. Because that's you, like, just being you. As a kid, you've got no baggage. You just are this little person, and you're quite happy being that little person. You don't know any different. You don't know about self-worth.
No, exactly. You just are fine.
You just exist.
Yeah, exactly.
And you just do what you want.
Yeah.
And then as we get older, you learn, and obviously for the best, you learn you can't just go and kick someone on the next table or run around screaming at a restaurant, because it's sort of not reasonable behaviour. It's not reasonable etiquette at a restaurant. So it's like you put on that sticker. You get the sticker that goes, don't scream and kick someone in a restaurant. Stick that on yourself. Right. Okay. But then that's a perfectly reasonable one. But you start to put all these other stickers on yourself where you go, I'm a person that is this. You start to build this thing that we call our identity. Mm-hmm. So we go, I'm a person that dresses like this. I would never dress like that. I listen to this kind of music. I support this football team. Therefore, I hate this football team.
Absolutely.
I reckon I could probably achieve that. I'll never be able to do this.
Yeah.
I'll never be able to do my own podcast, or I could never write a book because I'm just not good enough at that. Or I could never run this business, or I could maybe do this. I'm good enough for that person, but I would never be able to be in a relationship with a person like that. You know, we put all these labels on ourselves that is just all nonsense. It's just this, basically it's all stories. It's all stories that we tell ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And we write it on a sticker and put it on ourselves and go, well, that's me now.
Mm-hmm.
But then because we all want some sort of acceptance, we fight for this identity. So we go like, this is who I am now, and everyone needs to see this as me, this identity. And I went through this phase of like, I want everyone to see me as this edgy rock and roll guy. I'm the rock star of the ballroom, guys. So I used to dress up as a goth. I used to have long black hair and eye makeup and fingernails, and I fought for it. And everyone was going, well, like my mates are going, why are you wearing makeup? And I'd be going, because this is me. You just don't get me. Yeah. And I would really fight for it. And yeah. Even though I went for my first audition for Strictly Come Dancing looking like an Edward Scissorhands scarecrow. Like, and I of course I was never going to get the job. And I must have known that. But it was more important to me to fight for this identity than to get my dream job. Because, and then I started going, well, I don't want Strictly anyway. And then that became my identity. And we put all this nonsense on top of ourselves and all these stories that a lot of them can be, I'm not good enough. I can't achieve this. Or I'm, you know, people hate me. Or I'm not funny. I can't talk to people at parties. I can't, like, they just do that. I'm never going to be able to win this, you know, if you're playing sport or whatever. Mm-hmm. Because I'm not as good as these people. And we tell ourselves these stories. And then you end up going mad and thinking all these negative things about yourself, which I definitely did. And then you think, well, I've got to change this. And then you have people who don't understand it going, you need to change because this is not good for you. You're not in a good place right now. You need to change. And then you're thinking, oh, my God, I need to change. I must be awful. You know, like, I need to change. I need to change. Yeah, whereas when I went to the Tony Robbins thing, he just sort of explained, you don't need to change. Like inside all of this nonsense is the person that you are and that you know you are. And you just need to shed all of this stuff. Mm-hmm. You need to shed all of these voices, all of these stories that you're telling yourself, because it's just stories. You going, I could never write a book. Like if that's what you want to do, you feel like, oh, I'd quite like to write a book. And you go, but I'd just never do it though. That's what other people do. The truth is, anyone could write a book. Strictly's proof of that. You get people like who just cannot dance, and then 4 days later they're doing a paso doble and doing it really well, because it's just focus, focus, and putting in hard work. If you focus enough on anything, you can do most things.
Yeah.
But we tell ourselves that we can't. So it's just shedding all of that stuff and going, I actually just accept that this person that you are inside, and stop trying to show this other thing, to fighting for this identity in front of everyone else, and get rid of it. And that was really interesting to me, because I was in this zone of, I need approval, which came from performing and competitions, and like I need people to judge me first. Mm-hmm. I need people to clap me when I'm in a theatre. Mm-hmm. I just became this codependent that needed it all the time. I need, when I'm in a bar, I need to be the guy that everyone thinks is the coolest one, that can drink more than anyone else. And I need the girls to fancy me. Mm-hmm. And I need to, like, and I need all this. When actually I didn't need any of it, but I thought I did to exist.
Yeah, yeah.
I need people to think I'm wicked to exist. Whereas after that seminar, I thought, okay, maybe actually I'm all right with the fact that, you know, like, what do I absolutely want to do in this moment? Do I want to be in this bar till 4 o'clock in the morning trying to get someone's approval? Or do I want to watch Match of the Day?
And have a cup of tea.
And the truth was, I just want to watch Match of the Day and have a cup of tea. And the key is in going, that's all right. That's fine.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't need all... If that's what you want to do, then go and do that. That's all right. That's you. And there's nothing wrong with being a bit boring. You don't have to be the cool party crazy guy getting all the attention.
Totally. So, right, Springer's final thought. It's letting go then of labels, letting go of identity, letting go of the outcome.
Yeah.
And that's one of the keys to peace of mind and success in life.
Absolutely, 100%. And I say it, and I understand it all, and I'm aware of it all, and I'm trying to do better, doesn't mean to say that I'm any good at it.
No, yeah. So it's letting go of thinking you're going to be good at it as well.
Yeah, so, maybe I don't need to be good at it. No, just understand it and trust the process.
Excellent. Well, look, there was some gold in there. Kevin Clifton, absolute pleasure having you.
Thanks for having me. I've really enjoyed it.
Yeah, you know, it's been wonderful. Look forward to all your exciting dancing stuff. I know you've got, crikey, to go and rehearse now. So.
Rehearsing for the Christmas special.
Listen. Me and my missus will be voting for you, between you and me.
Thanks. It doesn't matter if I win, though. It doesn't matter.